Hi, and welcome to the latest episode of Music Talks, the podcast where we ask our guests to choose a song from each decade of their life, talk to us about how they went about that, and most importantly, why those songs mean so much to them. I'm delighted that my guest is another guest who has got in touch and said, I like the podcast and I'd love to be on it. I love catching up with all of my old friends, but doing this really, really is fun. So I'd like to welcome to the show Becky Hanshu. And I realized, Becky, as the intro music was playing, I should have checked your surname because you've been Henshaw in all my email communications until about half an hour ago.
Well, you said it perfectly, Terry. But yes, Hanshu, not Henshaw.
So in what is becoming the time-honored fashion, can we kick off by you painting the pen portrait of Becky?
I will. Thank you, Terry. It's great to be here. And it's so comforting to hear that intro music too. realizing that kind of help calm my nerves. Yeah, so I am a proud Cornish girl of Hampshire farming stock and Geordie mining stock. I grew up in Bude, Cornwall, spent the first 20 years of my life there, then went off to university in Manchester. Great 5 years, 4 years at university, 1 year working. And then I took off to live in Seattle. Sorry, I did a gap year before I went to university. So I spent a year in New Zealand teaching at a Catholic girls' school, or helping at a Catholic girls' school. Yes, arrived in Seattle. I had met a man while traveling there whilst I was still at university, and we ultimately got married, and I moved there in 98, and have been
we all slipped the decades.
Have been here ever since. You know, I don't know where those last couple of decades have gone, to be honest. It really takes me by surprise that I've been here over 21 years. Had my daughter in 2006 and have just been living the life, working and living here in this beautiful part of the world.
Yeah, I was just, a couple of things going through your bio, because, first of all, what took you to New Zealand other than obviously a gap year and work, but why New Zealand in 92? Because that's a big trip.
It was. You know, when we were just talking before, you said it was interesting that I ended up at a Catholic, or I chose to go to a Catholic girls' school. I really didn't choose that. I decided I wanted to do a gap year. I knew I wanted to travel, apply to the organization GAP, which those in the UK may be familiar with. And so was selected, and they placed me at that school in New Plymouth, which is a sort of a little, almost a offbeat city in New Zealand, not one that many people visit, to be honest. So yeah, that's mainly, I chose New Zealand, honestly. I think I could have, I did have the choice of which country I applied to. And having grown up in Bude in Cornwall, it's a surfing town, which I think surprises many people. There were a lot of Australians and Kiwis in my life as a teenager. So I think there was that draw to that part of the world. I was also a little intimidated to go to another country where they didn't speak English, or conditions might be a little harder. I'll admit there might have been a little bit of a wimp factor there. But yeah, great adventure.
So here's my theory, which is if you grow up in Cornwall, everywhere's a long way away. And it's just amplified in New Zealand, isn't it?
Yes. Yep. You know, I would love to get back there at some point in time. One of my best friends from high school, who we may mention later on with one of my selections, but her and her husband now live in New Zealand in Wellington. She just got citizenship down there. So there's a good chance I will make it back. But yeah, would love to do that.
There was a good friend of mine who actually went down in Microsoft days, who went down to New Zealand to be the GM of New Zealand. And I was always envious of him. Somebody did say, would I be interested? And at the time, I just couldn't move. But I always thought that would be a great job. And then I have to ask, we'll talk about Manchester later, because we've got quite a lot of things in common, not least of which our timing appears to be bad. But you went to Manchester to do Middle Eastern studies, learning Arabic and Turkish, and then decided to change to geography and environmental landscape planning.
Yeah. Yeah, a lack of career advisors in when I was doing my A-levels. I just was taking A-level French. I thought that I was good at languages. I had been captivated by Arab culture. Gosh, how old was I? About 14. Gul offered a 3-week trip to Morocco, which I had done. I had done that. There was something there that I thought, this is really interesting. I'd also had traveled in Turkey, family holidays. I just thought, this is really interesting. And so that's what I applied for. I got in despite not really having the grades that I should have had, which was great because it was a foot in the door at one of the best universities in the world, and got there. And we pretty quickly within my first year realized that Arabic was just not for me. I did not have that ear for the language. Fairly quickly realized that I needed to make a change. So finished out that first year, passed the Turkish element, did not pass the Arabic element, and went back to really what was probably what I probably should have applied for in the first place, which was geography. Geography at Manchester is very competitive, so I couldn't get into the full geography degree program, but I was able to get into what they call this combined studies program, which interestingly is probably most similar to the way American universities work, and sort of just pick and choose classes across different disciplines. And so I was able to take many of those geography classes that I wanted to, and also within the planning and landscape architecture departments. So I kind of created my own degree program in many ways.
Cool. I guess we should talk about some music. So can I ask you to kick off with the 70s, please?
All your guests probably previously have mentioned that first decade is generally tricky depending on when you're born in that decade. I was born in the first half of the decade in 1973, but I really don't have much of a recollection of music from that time period, obviously ending that decade when I was 6. Thinking back on it, I realized that there wasn't a lot of music playing in our house at that time. We mostly were listening to the radio, probably Radio 4. My dad, a farmer, would be milking the cows each day, and the radio would certainly be playing in the milking parlor. I have clear memories of that, but I just don't have the memories of the music. And it's funny, I was talking to my brother, my older brother, about doing this podcast, and one of the first things, and I sort of said, what music were our parents listening to in the 70s, or what were we listening to? And he said, we didn't listen to music, we listened to the radio. And that was completely unprompted.
I thought that was a great quote. We didn't listen to music, we listened to the radio. And it resonated with me. I mean, you'll know from previous episodes, I came from a pretty musical household, but so much of what we did listen to was the radio, and it was so influential.
Yeah. And I should say, we probably weren't listening to that much music radio. It was more talk.
Okay.
I don't even really remember what. That said, that the end of that decade, I certainly remember tuning into Top of the Pops, starting to get those hazy memories of that. And there's heaps of music from the 70s that I could, if you were asking me to choose a favorite song from the 70s or my top 10 song from the 70s, there's much I could choose from. But I wanted to be true to myself of what we were actually listening to. You know, looking back now, I love Janis Joplin. I think anything from Simon and Garfunkel's Bridge Over Troubled Water album. But those just weren't the memories that were there. Ultimately, I did choose Wuthering Heights, Kate Bush from 1978. I do remember seeing that Top of the Pops performance, that she's this captivating, unique woman doing this performance on Top of the Pops. It was just...
First of all, and I can't remember if I've sort of discussed this in previous episodes, but for our American listeners, as they say, we should probably explain Top of the Pops. So, you know, it was BBC, it was a Thursday night. For many years it was live, and then they realized that wasn't very sensible. But probably started 63, 64. And when I said about radio being influential, I mean, this was the most influential music show in the UK, because if you got onto Top of the Pops, then if your song was any good, then you were going to be successful. I haven't checked, but I think it would probably get into the 10 million people would watch this on a Thursday evening. A fair proportion of them, parents going, what do you call that music? And all of that good stuff. So you will find Brits will talk about these sort of seminal Top of the Pops moments. And certainly Kate Bush. And I can't remember, Becky, the last time I listened to Wuthering Heights, but
even now you listen to it and you go, it's a strange record.
It is.
Yeah. I mean, it really is. And the fact that she was nurtured for about 4 years by the record company. Dave Gilmour from Pink Floyd was her mentor and basically said, there's a talent here and we just need to look after her. And then she came out with this this incredible song. So let's take a listen, and then I want to talk to you because I liked your phrases in your notes about you. You realise you have a predilection for wailing women. But let's probably listen to the most successful wailing woman ever, Kate Bush. It still sounds very from another world.
It does.
So you referenced your other wailing women, and you had Tori Amos, Bjork, and Florence. And here's the interesting thing for me, which is if I look at my collection and see how many albums I've got from those three artists, you're probably over 20. I don't own any Kate Bush.
Oh, interesting.
And it's like, my wife has a difference. Wuthering Heights is a song that just nails on a blackboard to her. But it's not that I ever disliked her, but I just, you made a reference, I think, in your notes about the 80s of working hard not to like the stuff that was popular.
Yes.
So I think there may well have been an element of me that, because the reaction was so strong, it was like, not me, I'm not joining in. So talk to me about, because you had some other songs in the 70s that I was particularly interested in, Tiny Dancer.
Gosh, where do we want to go first with that? The Wailing Women or the...
Oh, well, do Wailing Women and then let's do Tiny Dancer.
And it's sort of, again, part of the reason why I chose that voice, that song is, it was just, later on, I was a big Tori Amos fan. And it's amazing that she didn't make it onto my list. I don't know what it is. I think that a lot of those artists that I like out of those, the Bjork and Kate Bush and Tori, they're quite divisive. So a lot of people think it sounds like nails on a chalkboard. But it just there's something about them that speak to me. And that's just the way it is. So for Tiny Dancer, again, it was, I really enjoy Elton.
Have you seen the film?
And I've seen the film, and I'm also currently reading his biography. Whether that also brought it to the forefront of my mind as well. But I think he just represents that. That's one of the other themes I've noticed in my music choices is I tend to lean towards the theatrical.
Yes.
A little bit. I was also fascinated by Freddie Mercury. I remember exactly where I was when he died. I can't honestly say I'm like this huge Queen fan. I am of the music. I love the music, but I just in terms of can I wax lyrical and tell you every song and every album and that kind of thing. That runs throughout my music listening. I'm not what I call a music academic.
Are the songs that just grab you?
Yes.
Yeah.
Very much so.
That's what's come across. And
I'm probably the opposite of you. You're so great with pulling out lyrics, and most of the time I don't even hear the lyrics a lot of the time. It's definitely, I think, melody and just something that grabs me.
So with that, I guess we should push on a decade and go to the 80s.
So the 80s, very much. I was a Cornish beach girl growing up, surrounded by beautiful countryside and coastline. I was heavily involved in sports. I was a netball player at a county and regional level. I was a surf life saver and competing in surf life saving at a national level. There wasn't a lot of time that I was sitting around listening to music. But that said, when I looked back on it, I don't know if it's just easier because I still own vinyls from that era. Yeah, my list for the 80s was quite long.
It sounds like a pretty idyllic childhood, I have to say.
It was pretty nice. Yeah. Yep, I can't complain.
That's it. Unashamedly, yep, I had it great. Yeah. It wasn't quite like that in Liverpool. It wasn't that bad. So what was on your shortlist then?
Oh, so Africa by Toto. Very specifically because we played it over and over and over again on that bus trip from Cornwall down through France and Spain in and around Morocco and back. So that's very much a specific memory of one point in time. Fairground Attraction, the album, The First of a Million Kisses, I still have that vinyl. I can look at that, the front cover of that vinyl, all day long. There's a number of songs on that album that really could have made it. I put Perfect on the shortlist.
Yep, absolutely. And have you listened to any of Eddie Reader's later stuff?
Yes. I don't own any of it. I have at points in time, but no, I need to go back. It's another one to add to my
well,
long
here's, well,
list.
We'll put it, because of course the great thing is if I mention anything, then I have to put it on the playlist.
Perfect.
So there's a brilliant album I love called Simple Soul, which frighteningly is now almost 20 years old, would you believe? It's 2001 and you suddenly think, oh my God. And if you want to get really retentive, then in 2003, she actually did a very successful album of the songs of Robert Burns. She had a sort of fallow period, but she's still very active in the Scottish music scene. And she's just one of those great characters, I think. But Simple Soul is highly recommended. There's some lovely songs.
The one song that probably made it closest to being my choice, but ultimately wasn't, is Cry Little Sister from the Lost Boys soundtrack.
Educate me. That was a complete left field. What?
Oh, and I almost wanted to choose it just because it's so outside of my normal choice. I thought it would be probably a surprise for many people in terms of the style of the song. But just the I don't know if you've ever seen
I haven't.
Lost Boys. Oh, okay. So it's, you know, you look back on it, it's a very 80s vampire movie set in Santa Cruz.
They were doing vampire movies in the 80s? I thought that was
they
a
did
recent
this
thing.
One.
You're ahead of your time, Becky, clearly.
So one of my friends introduced it to me. There's a love story that runs through it. Cry Little Sister is played during sort of an important romantic scene, part of the film. And just when you're 14 years old,
yep.
I guess that just captivated me. But the song it's a powerful song. But it's just one of those ones that kind of grabs you in the chest. And
yeah, it's also interesting listening to you talk in that you also have that thing of it's songs and memories and almost videos. So Toto and Africa and that trip and the film.
Yes.
You know, there's very strong connections there, which I love, absolutely love. So given, I mentioned it before, you said you were trying not to like the popular stuff. How did you then get to Erasure?
I don't know. Maybe it was just enough on the edges of popular. Certainly pop music, but it wasn't Wham. It wasn't Duran Duran.
No.
It wasn't Aha. That's who all my other friends were listening to. My closest friends, we were all firm Erasure fans. But I honestly don't remember exactly why I took Erasure as my group, the one that I followed and listened to. I just know that I really enjoyed all their music through this era. The later stuff, I sort of fell out of listening to them. Again, during that time of vinyl, their album covers were beautiful. The artwork on them was great, and I still have those. I just realized yesterday when I was writing my notes that this point in time, my brother left home when he was 16.
Right.
He did not stay to do A-levels. He's a smart guy. He just wasn't academic, wasn't into being at school. He went off to college, vocational college in Plymouth.
And how much older is he than you?
He's 2.5 years older.
Right. Okay. So you're quite close.
I remember that he was the one that I think bought me most of these Erasure albums. Probably at my request, but birthdays, Christmas, that was his thing. When I was talking to him recently, the second thing out of his mouth was, you have to choose Erasure. And initially, I wasn't
again,
going to.
When I saw that comment, I was like, I need to meet your brother. Yeah. on the basis of that's the sort of arrogant thing I would say.
Yeah. And I came so close to not choosing Erasure because of that.
Because of that. Yeah. It's the like, oh, so let me understand. You're going on this podcast, so let me tell you what you should do. Let me tell you what I would do. And that's probably being unfair to your brother, and I'm imparting myself.
No, I think you've nailed it.
Yeah, if my wife doesn't listen to all the episodes, but if she listens to this one, she will now be smiling, going, "The self-awareness is improving." let's take a listen to Erasure, and I mean, you look at it, and a band again. I was obviously aware of, but you know, Vince Clarke. He was in Depeche Mode, but left after an album. He then formed Yaz with Alison Moyet, who I loved. Alison then went off to do a solo stuff. He then did a brief thing with Fergal Sharkey, who was, for about 9 months, Fergal was going to be the biggest thing ever, and actually was a great talent. And then when that fell apart, formed Erasure. It's not exactly a bad track record, I have to say. So let's take a little listen.
Takes me right back to my 80s bedroom.
Good. Well, I have to say, not a song I was overly familiar with, but that chorus is just, it's become an earworm in the last 2 days in a good way. I just think it's so, so clever. So I'm going to push you on to the 90s, and I'm going to do something a little different here because I've mentioned notes and you were good enough to put in a lot of time to give me background, so thank you. But I am actually going to read 3 lines from your notes for the 90s, because what I will also say to other potential guests is Becky Dunley, I think you used the word before, Becky, of imposter, of, oh, I'm not sure, you know, I'm not sure I'm interesting enough. Try this. The 90s was a decade of transition for me. I lived on three continents, started the decade living at home doing my A-levels, and ended the decade married and living in Seattle. In between, I lived in New Zealand, travelled to Australia and Hong Kong, and spent 5 years in Manchester. Pretty dull to me. That's a heck of a decade. So, talk us through it.
Yes. The 90s was certainly a pivotal decade, a transitional decade, and probably my most interesting.
I'm not sure you could have coped with many more decades.
maybe that is a good way to think about it.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, and I almost eclipsed talking about Manchester when I was initially thinking about the 90s in terms of music. Yes, 5 years in Manchester as a student, and then, say, 1 year, or almost a year working. I went there in 92 and was there until July 98. I was always late to the party. I moved to Manchester really after the Manchester scene was a big thing. I remember I had applied to Manchester. My college university application process was very much, okay, which universities around the country are doing Middle Eastern studies? There's about, at that point, I think there were about five or six. I applied to all of them. Manchester was the one that accepted me, even though my A-level grades were not as great as they could and should have been. I think, to quote the admissions officer, they would rather have the bad student they know than didn't. I don't think I was a bad student. I was not a bad student.
He'd clearly been on the motivational course then. Right.
But I was in. So it wasn't, you know, I must go to Manchester. I had other friends who were like, wow, you're going to Manchester. That's so exciting. There's so many great things happening on the music scene. I was like, oh, okay. Once I got there, Oasis, of course, became very big during that time. And I certainly enjoyed Oasis. I wouldn't say I was their biggest fan. I happened to be living in Moss Side, very close to Main Road Stadium when they did their very famous two-night gigs in 96. So all that was going on in the background. I was really not a big music person at that point. I did start going to see shows at the Manchester Roadhouse. I was trying to do some research to figure out who it was I saw there at that time, and I could not figure that out, but I know I went.
Well, it's interesting when you know I love my connections, and your comment of, you know, your timing is always out. I think I've said this before, but, you know, I became a teenager 5 months after the 60s finished. And then I was actually in Manchester from 79 to 87. So I moved about 4 months before Manchester started. And the thing that I always keep, you know, because we all have our guilty secrets, is, of course, that said, the Smiths were around and all of that. And I was never a big Smiths fan. So there I was. And again, I think it was part of this, you know, you're living in Manchester and everybody is talking about the Smiths, and therefore I didn't. So basically you and I bookended Manchester, but neither of us were there.
I realized I completely skipped over mentioning my year in New Zealand. We talked about it a little bit earlier.
Well, we should go back.
So, yeah, I was there in New Zealand 92 to 93, working in this Catholic girls' school. Spent the summer holidays there, which was December, January.
And when you say working, Becky, were you teaching English?
No, that's why I tend to correct myself when I say teaching, because I really was a classroom assistant. Right. I did a lot of help with the PE classes because I was a netball player, although they were all much better netball players than me. and working in the school office. I was also, it was a boarding school. So I was a help at the in the boarding house too. And then summer, the December, January, I, with a number of other, the GAP students, we did the big tour around New Zealand, the Kiwi experience on the bus.
Wow.
Spent the New Year's Eve, 92 going into 93, bungee jumping and riding alongside some people who went skydiving. I did not actually do the skydive myself, but I was up in the plane and watched them jump out. And
my God. I'm impressed enough that you did bungee jumping, never mind.
So all the crazy, wild things you do when you're
18. You ticked all of the boxes. So how long was the trip around New Zealand then?
We spent most of that January. So I think it was, wow. almost a 4 month.
Fantastic.
Yeah. That's
Fantastic.
The way to do it.
So from there, back to Manchester. And then you decide to take a solo trip to Seattle, Victoria and Vancouver.
Yep. So having had a relatively long-term boyfriend in Manchester, we had split up. He had been a glaciologist who had been to the Pacific Northwest to study glaciers. And I said, oh, you would love Seattle. I was heavily involved in the University of Manchester Hiking Club, this sort of hiking and a little bit of mountaineering. And so it was sort of that draw of the mountains. I don't remember being heavily into coffee, but I remember him saying, you'll love the mountains, the coffee, and the something else. So I also had a friend who I'd met whilst traveling in New Zealand who lives in Vancouver. So I just decided to do this trip.
Had New Zealand given you the travel bug?
Yes. Yeah. Well, I actually think I had the travel bug before that. So this was, the continuation of the travel bug.
So was Seattle anything like you expected?
That's a really good question. I don't know what I expected, to be honest. This is almost embarrassing to admit, but I remember flying in on that first trip, and it was mid-June. So it was actually one of the beautiful summer days that we have here in Seattle. Mount Rainier was crystal clear. And looking out the plane window and going, oh, what's that big mountain? I just really hadn't done my research. Not sure where my brain was at, but I very quickly realized what an incredibly beautiful city it was. To kind of cut to a long story of how I ended up living here, that day one of being in Seattle, I was booked myself into the youth hostel. I took myself out to do a little walking around the city. Wanted that connection to the natural side of the city. I guess maybe drawn to the beach, the sound, being a beach and coastal person. Wanted to walk along this beautiful waterfront, which anyone who knows Seattle in the downtown area at that point in time, you were somewhat segregated from the water. But if you keep walking far enough north, you eventually get to a place called Myrtle Edwards Park, which is right on the water. Yep. So I had wandered along there and I stopped to take a rest and to write in my journal, as a good traveling student does. Yep. And I sat down and a homeless gentleman decided to come over and talk to me and was quizzing me where I was from. And I sort of looked around and, was thinking to myself, okay, I'm here on my own and how am I going to deal with this situation? Yep. A little nervous. And I saw a man sitting close by watching the situation. I honestly don't know what it was that made me stand up and go over and talk to this other complete stranger and start up a conversation in what seemed like a good way to get out of this other situation that I did not want to be in.
Sure.
That person ended up to be what is now my husband.
Wow.
And I have been here over 20 years because of that fateful meeting.
Do you think it was fate, if you don't mind me asking?
I do. I'm a big believer in fate.
As am I, and needless to say, there's a musical connection. I did an episode with Steve Routledge. I actually did two, Best Albums of the Year and Best Songs. My favourite song of the year was by Bill Callahan, and it's called What Comes After Certainty. And it's a lovely love song, but it has the line in there, I don't believe in fate, I believe in destiny, which is a line I love. The next line, by the way, is, and there's my destiny out in front of me, swerving drunkenly. But I have to say that when I was growing up, my mum, one of her stock phrases was, ah, it's fate. And I completely sort of abhorred that and didn't agree with it. And as I've got older, I've become more and more convinced that she may have been right. And I think, what I love, there's so much to love in that story, but the fact it was day one, and the fact that you were in a challenging situation. So, What a great, great story. So where do we go from there? I guess we should choose some music.
Right. So, yeah, so much to cram in this decade. During my time in Manchester, I was listening to Portishead. The Dummy album was a very frequent rotation. Lots of melancholy evenings listening to that one.
It's amazing how often Portishead comes up, I have to say. Right from the first episode with Steve Clayton, it's probably been in half a dozen episodes. So it is an incredible album.
That would have been an easy choice for me to put in as my choice for the decade, something from that album. Once I had met Kurtz, he is really my musical guiding light. He's not a musician himself, but has always been a great music lover. And growing up here in Seattle in the 90s, and an eclectic taste.
And is he Seattle born and bred?
He was. We get back to the Bruce Springsteen connection. He's New Jersey. He's New Jersey born.
Well, I'd already started. I'd already started to like him.
But he came out west when he was three. His family traveled across country and spent some time in Portland. I think his elementary school years, middle school years in Portland, and then worked their way up to Seattle. So really, from certainly high school age onwards in Seattle. And that curating of music for me started very early on, as we were doing our just about 2 years of long distance dating. He was making mixtapes for me.
Good man.
So some of the songs on my shortlist are certainly ones that I remember from those mixtapes. Unfortunately, I may have one of them, but no means of playing it at the moment. And many of those tapes have disappeared. But Unmarked Helicopters by Soul Coughing is a great song that was on my shortlist. He also introduced me to his friend, good friend at the time that he worked with, Kim Virant, of the local band Lazy Susan.
Yes, who I've heard of but never heard, so I must do that.
Her later solo album, Songs from a Small House, which actually didn't come out till 2007, is you need to seek that one out.
I will
out.
Look that one out, thank you.
Beautiful, beautiful album. And there are other music in that time. Once I had met Kurtz, I started going to a lot more live gigs.
Yep.
It was great there for a time, because he would tell me about an artist that hadn't hit popularity in the UK. So I ended up seeing some artists who in pretty small venues. Beck, although that was a slightly bigger show, Ben Harper, and then vice versa. We saw shows in Seattle with UK artists that weren't as big.
Yeah, we always used to, one, we enjoyed that, and two, there was Paul Weller was the one that always used to stick in mind. There was one gig Weller did at the Neptune, and I think about 20% of the audience was ex-Microsoft UK.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously. But, you know,
I've been to some of those shows.
Yeah, we'd been back in London a few months earlier and seen him at a 10,000, you know, seat arena, and here he was playing down the road from us, which was great. So in amongst all of that, your choice is Jewel. So talk to us about that.
Yeah, so that was also one of those artists who I saw at the Hop and Grape in the Manchester Students Union.
Wow.
Pretty sure it must have been Kurtz who introduced her to me. Just, again, falls into that category, female singer-songwriter. And at that time, that particular album was, as I was splitting my time between Seattle and the UK, you know, my heart was very much wanting to be here in Seattle with Kurtz, and I was just listening to that album a lot, and I ultimately chose Morning Song as my song for the 90s. It's just a very simple, beautiful song. I think it talks to a time of in our lives that were much simpler. We were young, in love. We certainly didn't have any money. I wasn't working when I first moved to Seattle. Obviously, it was the time until my work permits.
Yep.
And such came through. It just captures how I was feeling at that point in time.
Well, I think it captures it beautifully. And there was somewhere in your notes where you used the phrase that just said it was a different time, and it certainly paints a lovely picture. So let's take a listen.
Mm-hmm. Let the world spin outside our door. You're the only one that I wanna see. Tell your boss you're sick, hurry. Get back in, I'm getting cold. Get over here and warm my hands up, boy. It's you they love to hold. And stop thinking about what your sister said. And stop worrying about it. Yes, the cat's already been fed. Come on, darling, let's go.
When I get songs like that, then there's videos in my head. You know, with Pipe Place, and there's the apartments above. So in my head, that's where yes. that song is taking place. So thank you.
<You're welcome.
laughs> Oh, by the way, the other thing that occurred to me when listening to that, I mentioned that Eddie Reader album, Simple Soul. That song could have come from that. So if you do get to listen to it, listen to a song called Footsteps Fall. And maybe the protagonist in that song 10 years later, but have a listen to that. Okay, so that's the 90s, then on to the noughties.
Great. The Lost Decade.
It's a great name for a film.
Right. Yeah, so the noughties, or whatever it is we're calling
yeah,
it.
Yeah, absolutely.
I was here in Seattle. Of course, remember the infamous Millennium New Year's celebration.
Yep.
Going into 2000, they cancelled the fireworks because of security risks at Seattle Center.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I was working, enjoying everything that Seattle had to offer. I wasn't doing a lot else until 2006, when our daughter was born. And then those last 4 years of the decade... caring for her. And I realized as I was going back through music and what I was doing at that time, I'm kind of at a loss.
Interesting.
What's going on? We certainly went and saw shows. I was listening mostly to the Kaiser Chiefs. We went and saw Badly Drawn Boy at the Fillmore in San Francisco, Ben Harper.
Badly Drawn Boy, I am really, really jealous about, because... The Hour of Wildebeest is one of mm-hmm. my favourite albums. And then a very personal connection, and I think, again, you mentioned it in notes, was the soundtrack to About a Boy.
Yes.
Well, with a film about a boy. So that's one of my son's favourite films. And if you listen to... I actually thought about getting into the lyrics, but I'd probably get a bit tearful, so we won't. But have a listen to A Minor Incident.
Yeah, that soundtrack is certainly one of my favorites.
Yeah, A Minor Incident is my son. So
okay,
and I love the fact that you referred to Badly Drawn Boy as a tea cozy troubadour.
Doesn't everyone call him?
I'm the nerd here, and I'd never heard that. And if anybody doesn't know who Badly Drawn Boy is, he wears a hat that looks remarkably like what the Brits call a tea cozy. A great talent who seems to have just disappeared. And you mentioned it before that there's always a Springsteen connection. He's a massive Bruce fan. He's also recorded a version of Thunder Road that I will put on the playlist, and you have to listen to, because it's a beautiful arrangement. He hasn't really changed the arrangement that much. But, of course, you then get that Mancunian accent. And it's one of those things that I think it's terrible and brilliant at the same time. You know, in that the screen door slams, Mary's dress waves. but it works. So I'm very jealous of that.
Yeah, and the Kaiser Chiefs, again, is one of those that we first saw them at the Crocodile here in Seattle. If I remember rightly, it was sold out. I mean, they were just sort of getting more popular at that point in time. So that was really fun. And I actually got to talk to some of the guys before, after the show. Definitely talked to Peanut, the keyboardist. And then second show, we saw them a few years later at the Showbox here in Seattle. And that was a memorable show because unfortunately, poor Ricky, the singer, had lost his voice.
Oh, yeah, he said.
Went on with the show anyway, barely squeaking through most of the songs, relying on a lot of audience participation and using cue cards to speak with the audience between songs.
Oh, fantastic. Well, in fairness, the Kaiser Chiefs, I mean, he's a great performer. So they could probably get away with that. Some great choices in there, but you've then gone and chosen an artist I'd never heard of.
You haven't heard of Mattis Yahu?
Absolutely not. I'll say it again. It's why I love doing this, because it was like, wow.
Well, I'm honored to be introduced, to be able to introduce him to you. Yes, Mattis Yahu is... So he had an album, Live from Stubbs, that came out in 2005. I want to say spring of 2005. And that album took off in a big way. At least in my world, it did. And again, Kurtz had got wind of this artist. He was a Hasidic Jew and performing with his band at that time, the Dub Trio, I believe, doing reggae dub music and just something that you had never seen before. And you really need to check out that Live at Stubbs album.
Well, I'm now. This is the problem of being the fully paid up music board is that I'm now feeling inadequate. Because, you know, how all of my filters missed a Hasidic Jew doing reggae and dub, I just don't know. But I will check it out. And the track you sent through, I thoroughly enjoyed. So
that was, and that's a slightly later track. So he's very interesting. He's really transformed over time. At the point when we first went and saw him at a free show put on by the University of Washington, Halil, it was an outdoor show. He was at that point still very much dressing in the full Hasidic Jewish.
Wow.
Regalia. Later, I can't remember how many years after that, decided that he maintained his spirituality, but he didn't need to stay with wearing those clothes and that kind of thing, and actually changed the band that he was performing with and went much more sort of electronica.
Okay.
And I saw him again at the Neptune. Another amazing show, and I just remember him coming out onto stage with sort of the hip hop flat build baseball cap and just a very different look.
Wow!
But still, the music had grown and moved on and still.
So
very
enjoyable. So you still enjoy him even though there's been such a transition?
Very much.
That's
very
great.
Much so.
That's
yeah.
Great.
Yep.
And how do you pronounce his name?
Mattis Yahu.
Therefore, let's take a listen.
Sometimes I lay under the moon. I thank God I'm breathing. And I pray, don't take me soon. Cause I am here for reasons. Sometimes in my tears I drown, but I never let it get me down. So when negativity surrounds, I know someday it'll all turn around. Because all my life I've been waiting for, I've been praying for the people to say that we don't wanna fight no more. There'll be no more war, and our children will pay. One day.
I know that song is now 11 years old, but it's a sentiment we could all do a bit more of at the moment, I think, I feel. So thank you for a beautiful choice.
Yep. And it just makes me want to dance, too.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's a good job we're not doing a video call because you would have been witnessing me bopping around in here. I definitely have memories of dancing around the living room with Maddie to that one.
Oh, that's lovely. That's lovely. Well, having said that, that takes us into the current decade, bringing your daughter up and introducing her to music. And it sounds like her introducing you to some stuff as well.
Yes. Yep. Again, in terms of my personal life, it's just been very much living life. Nothing really unusual or exciting, but bringing up a daughter, that's pretty exciting.
Pretty exciting. And,
you know, she's great. Kurtz is certainly tries to make sure that he is introducing her to a wide ranging mix of music.
Does he do mixtapes for her, playlists for her?
You know, he, I think he's done a couple, but not on a regular basis. We do classic album Sundays, where often we will be in the car going somewhere on a Sunday and he'll grab one of the CDs from his collection and make sure that she's listening. She, at this point, she'll be turning 14 this week, is very much has her own thoughts on music, probably not what Kurtz and I mostly are wanting to be listening to, although she has definitely introduced me to some artists in this last year or so who I very much enjoy, and I'll come back to that.
Okay.
But those early days of I did put in my notes of sitting at the feet of Chris Ballew, who anyone here in Seattle or anybody with children here in Seattle probably knows performs as Casper Baby Pants.
There you go.
Wonderful, wonderful. But that just goes to say that I was not delving deep into new music in a big way during certainly the earlier part of the last decade.
But you were working at a radio station. So how did that happen?
another sort of serendipitous moment. I had moved on from managing a IT consulting company with my that was my one connection with working with Microsoft here in Seattle. And it really wasn't working out. I wasn't happy and was looking for a change, and happened to have a friend who's a reporter here at the radio station is KUOW. We are the Seattle's one of two NPR stations here in Seattle.
Yep.
And she's a reporter here, and I knew her through our children. She has a son the same age as Maddie. So I had just sort of spread that a wide net of sort of said, you know, I'm looking for a new job. And she said, you know, at that point we hadn't known each other very long. And she said, I don't even really know what you do, but there's this job here at the radio station. And it was a project manager position within the finance and admin office. And I applied and got the job, and I've been here 9 years.
So, wow.
Yeah, we're a news talk station. Not much music, although we have had a few musical guests come through in the time, and I have a couple of interesting stories and connections with that. But
please tell, because one of them involves one of my heroes, Steve Earle. So I can't wait.
It does. So one of your heroes, and also one of Kurtz's. Again, an artist who I certainly very much like. None of his songs have risen to the level of they made any of my shortlists, but certainly always happy to see him live and listen to him, and a very, very interesting guy.
Yeah, he's had an interesting life.
He has. And one of our producers walked into my office. I do a lot of our compliance and, you know, making sure people aren't breaking the rules. And
yep.
One of the producers walked into our office and said, we've got a musical guest that needs to take a cab from downtown to the station. How do we pay for that? Are we okay to pay for that? He must have mentioned Steve Earle's name. And my ears perked up. And I jokingly said, I'll go pick him up. And so the producer's like, really? Do you want to? And it was kind of one of those moments of like, what did I just get myself into?
Well done.
So, So that's how it happened that I drove Steve Earle from his hotel back to our station, which is here in the U District. It was amusing. He got into the car. He was already talking on his cell phone with his promoter, I think, or his manager. And he's having this conversation and talking about that redheaded English guy with the small guitar.
Oh, fantastic. Fantastic.
And I'm just sort of politely driving along, you know, and it turned out that he was talking about Ed Sheeran, who he was not happy with, because Ed Sheeran has a song, Galway Girl, as does Steve Earle. I guess Steve's feeling on that was, it's not the same song, it has the same title, but you know, he was not happy.
He may not see it quite that way.
Yeah, he did eventually get off the phone, and we chatted for a little bit, and then I safely delivered him.
I'm absolutely going to dine out on that, which is the ginger-haired English guy with the little guitar. And just imagine Steve Earle saying that. Should we go to your choice, for your last choice for this decade?
Yes, yeah. And this one, poor Terry had to put up with me making multiple changes for my choice for this decade. I flip-flopped around a bit. I don't know if it's just because it's still so recent. But I ultimately went with Ocean Eyes by Billie Eilish. She is a performer who is one of the ones that Maddie introduced me to in the last year or so, along with Lizzo, who I know that you...
Yeah, well, you should have been at Austin, because Lizzo was on and Billie Eilish was on as well.
I know. And I'd seen Billie actually not long before that, May of this year. I was able to surprise Maddie with some tickets to go and see her at Marymore, which was a wonderful show. It'll be interesting to see where she goes. I think she's very talented. I think she's really interesting. Tom York, I know, has said that she's one of the best talents out there at the moment. I have a friend who happens to volunteer for an organization that puts her backstage at many shows here in town. They're a dog rescue,
right?
And they take dogs to concerts, and the performers spend time with these puppies before they go on stage. I'm not quite sure how this came about, but that's
a gig like that.
Exactly. So my good friend Christy, quite often, she's a volunteer with them and does a lot of wonderful work with them, and quite often gets to meet these amazing performers while playing with puppies. And she did this for the Billie Eilish show, and it's the second time she'd done it. And she will say that Billie is very grounded. Her family are also just they're all there for her. She at one point we were you know, in front of the stage waiting for the show to start, and she texted and said, "Yeah, I'm backstage." And there's a photo of Billie way off in the distance, just scooting around on her hoverboard.
Cool.
You know, she's still that teenage kid. That said, she's blown up. She's everywhere. She's constantly on the radio at the moment. So we'll see how long I can hang with that, but.
I think there's an interesting connection here. If you go back to where we started with Kate Bush, and I sort of said it as an aside, but there she was as a, and I mean it positively, you know, precocious, talented 14, 15-year-old.
Absolutely.
And actually what EMI Records did was keep her in cotton wool for 4 years.
Yeah.
So you just hope with Billie Eilish. I mean, she's, as you say, she's getting, certainly from the older fraternity, you mentioned Tom York, but there was an article last week, I think, that Dave Grohl, they'd done a sort of Nirvana reunion, but apparently the highlight of it was his teenage daughter sang one of the songs and did a fantastic job, apparently. But he was being interviewed and he basically said Billie Eilish is plugging into things in the same way that Nirvana did 25 years ago. So, as you say, you just hope that she gets looked after and the talent gets nurtured.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. But, and it's funny to say that I did know that Dave Grohl was a big fan of hers, partly because of his teenage children. Eddie Vedder was also backstage at that Marymore show with his teenage daughter.
But then again, Eddie turns up to any gig that's going.
That is true.
The only question was Eddie sober? the last time we saw Springsteen, which was actually a brilliant gig in Seattle, managed to come really good in the lottery. So it's the only one of my 48 gigs where I was literally on the front rail. But Eddie came out to do Bobby Jean and clearly had a few more than he should and was struggling with the lyrics, but he's always good fun. He's always good fun.
Well, and it's good to know we're in some great company of being taken, dragged to these shows. I was not dragged to Billie Eilish, but encouraged to go to these shows by our teenagers.
I think it's great. I think it's great. Let's take a listen.
I've been watching you for some time. Can't stop staring at those ocean eyes. Burning cities in napalm skies. 15 flares inside those ocean eyes. Your ocean.
It's a beautiful song. And the amazing thing is that she wrote that one back in 2016, I think, and she was only 14.
Jeez. That is just ridiculous. Well, as I say, it's interesting circularity that you started with someone who was writing at 14 and also finished with it, which is great.
Yeah, which I had not thought of. But.
Well, see, it's all I spend my time is finding these connections, which I love. I love. So, Becky, one, thank you. I've really, really enjoyed it. You know my standard closing question, which is any final thoughts, and keen to hear what they are.
Yeah, well, thank you, Terry. This has been a lot of fun. Early on when we were emailing, and I think as we talked about me feeling like an imposter, I think it was fairly recently after you'd done the episode where you talked about, it was soon after I'd listened to the episode where you talked about imposter syndrome.
Yeah.
It took me on a journey that I have thoroughly enjoyed. We've also talked about music as therapy.
Yeah.
This has been therapy for me to go back and revisit some of those times and also to look ahead and see what's next. There are some potential big changes coming up in our life that we have to make some decisions about. And so I'll be looking to those. But I also I now have so much more music that I need to go listen to. Every episode of the podcast, there is something for me to go and seek out, and I love that. And I feel that now that Maddie's that bit older, I have some more time to be able to do that. So I certainly look forward to it, and I'm honored to have been on the podcast. So
no, well, it's been
thank you so much.
It's been my pleasure and privilege. And if people want to get in touch with you, Becky, what's the best way?
Email. I have an old-fashioned Hotmail account. It's Becks, B-E-C-K-S, _ handshoe, H-A-N-D-S-H-E-W, at hotmail.com.
That's great. And if people want to get in touch with me, similarly, I still use email. So you can get me at musictalkspod@outlook.com, or you can get in touch with me on Twitter, which is @musictalkspod, or I mentioned the Facebook page, which, again, to make it easy, is Music Talks Pod. Thanks, Becky. Real, real delight. And my final comment with this, in your notes, you suggested the Music Talks reunion dinner, which I think is a genius idea.
Yes.
And be careful what you wish for, because assuming Mr. Springsteen delivers and does tour this year, then my plan will be to come out to Seattle. So one, it would be great to meet up. Two, I did look at the episode. So there would be Steve Clayton, who was episode one, Larry Hauser, Paul Simpson, Richard Horsfield, and Jen Henshaw, yourself. And I think we should invite Kurtz as an honorary guest. You know, any man who does mixtapes, You can share this with him, that I am retentive enough that I have my top 200 albums, and I have them, it's all printed out on a paper copy of a spreadsheet, and I have an app on my phone, that a random number generator. So I will press that, and whatever number comes on, that's what I listen to. Not every day.
Oh, that's great.
But that's how sad I am. With that, thanks again. Hope your day goes really well, and look forward to catching up soon.
Thank you.